but he has to move to the land of Moab because of the famine that's in the land of Judah. He's living in Bethlehem of Judah. Of course, we had noticed at one time there was also another Bethlehem. It was one of those cities that was given to the tribe of Zebulun. But this particular Bethlehem is usually clarified as being Judah. So that's where he lives. They move over to that country. They spend about 10 years there. And during that time, his sons marry. And then he and his sons, all three, die during that particular time. And so Naomi decides to move back to her home city, Bethlehem. And she starts out with her two daughter-in-laws. But she's encouraging them really to stay back with their people. Orpah, the one who had been married to Chilion, does that, but not in Ruth's situation. She's intent on going. And we notice the verses 16 and 17 of chapter 1, a very familiar passage. And Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee, for whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, thy God my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." So with that situation, Naomi does not try to get her to return. But as they get back to the city of Bethlehem, Naomi, which meant pleasant, she says, "Don't call me Naomi anymore, but call me Mara, because that means bitter." In verse 21, it says, "For the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord brought me home again empty. Seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me." Oh, just a minute here. I think we need to learn something from that. A lot of things in our life aren't as they the way we think they ought to be. A lot of difficulties, a lot of heartache, sadness in life. But what right have we to question the Almighty? We might not understand, but we need to accept what comes our way. All about Romans chapter 8, 28. "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord, to them who are called according to His purpose." We need to wait on the Lord sometimes. That's right. Our ways are not His ways, are they, Freddie? Quick look. That's where Bethlehem was. They had traveled over down into the land of Moab, and now she has gone back. Okay. So, wanting to care for her mother-in-law, Ruth is quick to go out to glean, and she happens to end up in the field of a man by the name of Boaz, a kinsman of Elimelech. Of course, you may recall our discussion maybe back in the time of Gideon. What words did he use to appease the Ephraimites? He said, "You have gleaned more than those of us who have gone out to harvest." So the idea of gleaning is that of just picking up what has fallen, something that's been dropped. deliberately or not deliberately. But that's what she was doing, going out trying to gather that which was left on the ground by the workers. But as Boaz came to the field, he saw what type person Ruth was, and he began to offer kindnesses to her, protecting her in many ways, saying, "Stay with my maidens. You can eat with them, drink with them. Don't go to another field. You young men, keep your hands off of her." And he also tells his workers, drop a little extra and don't rebuke her for picking it up. So he sees the kind of character this woman has. In verse 11 of chapter 2, he said, "The Lord recompense thee for thy work." She may have been a beautiful woman physically. We don't know. But she had a beautiful character. So she continues to glean throughout the harvest time, the harvest of the barley and also the wheat. So, as we get to chapter 3, then we see Naomi. She's been at home. But this woman, she's been thinking all along. She's not been resting, twiddling her thumbs, as said Judy. She got a plan in mind. And she's not just coming up with this, I don't think, overnight, because if you go back to chapter 2 and verse 20, look at one thing is what she said to her daughter-in-law after she found out where she had been gleaning. She said, "If I can get over there." And Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord who hath not left off his kindness." And Naomi said to her, "The man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen." Ooh. That may have been a subtle way of saying, young lady, this may be the man that carries you home with him to be his wife someday. So I think her thought process began to kick in maybe about that time. So now it's time for her to reveal what she has in mind to her daughter-in-law who has been so good to her. She says, "Now, what you need to do is go wash yourself, anoint yourself, put on nice clothes," chapter 3 and verse 3, "and then you go down to where Boaz is. He's at the threshing floor, but you wait until he has eaten his meal and has gone to sleep before you make your presence known to him." So, when he does recognize that you are there, then he will tell you what you need to do. So, acting on the instruction of her mother-in-law, we see Ruth doing just as she has told. She waits until he is asleep, and then she goes and uncovers his feet, puts part of the covering over her, beside where he is sleeping. And as you might expect, didn't know exactly what was going on, but soon he found out what process was going on. And in effect, Ruth was asking Boaz to take her as his wife. And she uses strange language maybe to us. In verse 3 and verse 9, she said, "I am Ruth thy handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a new kinsman." If you go back to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 22 and verse 30, we'll see maybe the way in which this idea of skirt is used maybe in the Bible. Chapter 27, verse 30, I believe it is. It's not the verse. Can't read them all right. Verse 20. Cursed be he that lieth with his father's wife, because he uncovereth his father's skirt. And all the people shall say amen. Also over in chapter 22 and verse 30. There was my 30. Very similar type statement is made. A man shall not take his father's wife, nor discover his father's skirt. So it indicates the relationship of husband and wife. He is asking Boaz to take her to be his wife. Again, it may seem a little bit odd to us, but that was the custom of the day, and also according to God's law, that someone would not violate a man's skirt, quotation marks. So it's obvious now to him what the situation is. And based on his encounter he has had with this young lady earlier, then he knows what type of character she is. She may have been beautiful physically. We don't know. But that is not what he's looking at right now. So, he knows that there is a kinsman, though, that's nearer to her than he is. And so, he knows that this kinsman has a right to redeem her if he wishes to do so. But look at the compliment that he pays this young woman. Verse 10, he said, blessed be thou the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast shown more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. He's saying, look at what you've been doing. Very important what you've done. Taking care of your aged mother-in-law, rather than out here running around just trying to find you a young husband, whether he be rich or poor. So, again, he's indicating the type of person that Ruth is at this particular time. So, he does another thing, too. He sends her away before the morning because he's worried about her reputation. He has promised to do what she's requested, if that's possible. But look at what he says about her. He says, all the people of my city know you are a virtuous woman. That speaks multitudes about this particular woman. That's verse 11 of chapter 3. So, whether we're pretty, you look at me and tell me I don't fall in that category, but you ladies particularly, whether you're pretty, ugly, in between, the main thing is have people be able to say about you, you are a virtuous woman. So he sends her away, but he doesn't send her away empty-handed. He says that you take 6 measures of barley and carry it back for your mother-in-law. That's basically what he does in the latter part of chapter 3 down in verse 17. But again, he had promised to do whatever he could to accommodate the request that she has made. So, Ruth goes back. She tells her mother-in-law what has happened. And now it's kind of waiting time. How long is she going to have to wait to get an answer, though? 3 or 4 months? 6 months? What did Naomi tell her about this particular man? Yeah. Not going to be no 3 months, 6 months, is James. No. She said, just be patient. Be patient for a few hours. Basically, that's all she's saying. Because this man, he will not be in rest until he has finished this thing this day. Verse 18 of chapter 3. And so Naomi's right. He doesn't waste any time. He goes right to the gate of the city, sits down, and he waits. The next of kin comes by fairly soon, apparently. He invites him to sit down, and the next of kin joins him at the gate of the city. Well, he calls 10 men of the elders of the city, and he says, come here. We got some business that we need to take care of. So he explains the situation to these 10 men, lays out the facts in front of the group, and then he turns and says, okay, next to kinsman, do you want to redeem the land that belonged to Elimelech? Well, and he says, if you don't, then I want to redeem it. But it seems like there's one little factor that he may have not said too much about initially. He said, now, if you want to redeem the land, there's also something else that goes with it. You get a wife in the deal too. You get to take a young lady to be your wife. And so, with that disclosure, the next of kinsmen, he said, I think I will buy out of this situation, lest it mar or distract from my inheritance. So he's not willing to buy into it, lest it affect the current situation he finds himself in. He's not willing to raise up seed to another man, as maybe the law somewhat required or at least allowed. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Right. Yeah. He was looking at strictly initially maybe some gain. But when he found out the details of this thing, then he was not interested at all. Sometimes maybe we're in the same category, don't we, Freddie? Maybe we look at a situation and said, oh, okay. But when we find out the responsibilities that go with that particular situation, we said, oh no, count me out. Good point. Other comments? All right. So, Boaz has laid the situation out in front of this man and the 10 elders of the city. And so, now it's time for him to act on his promise to this woman, Ruth. So, he goes ahead and they go through the ritual or the custom of the day. That being that when a man sells or gives up property, his right for property, then he actually takes his shoe off and gives it to the person that he was dealing with, selling the property to or giving up his rights to that property. So we see this taking place. The man who had been the next of kin gives Boaz his shoe, thereby making Boaz, in effect, the next of kin. But Boaz goes back and he reiterates the conditions under which he will be bound. He will have all that belong to Elimelech, Naomi, and their sons. In addition, he would pass purchase Ruth for his wife to raise up the name of Mahlon, her dead husband. So, in time, we don't know how much time, but Boaz does, in fact, marry Ruth, and the Lord blessed them with a son, as we see in the latter part of chapter 4. Said, moreover, Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead he be not cut off from among his brethren, and from the gate of his place, and ye are witness to this, and so forth. Verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. He went in to her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And look at the difference. Now I'm going to back up a little bit. Remember what Naomi had said, call me or bitter. Do you see anywhere in this story where that the Bible refers to her as Mara? Are her friends, did they ever call her Mara? I thought that was interesting. That's what she wanted to be called. That was her attitude toward life at that particular point. But look at the change that this situation makes in her life. Verse 14. Not only was she excited about what has happened, but the women that were with her, her friends, they were also excited about what is happening too. They are rejoicing, praising God for this special gift. Verse 14. And they said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And look at what this child is going to do. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. What a change. Sometimes we just have to wait. Life is not always pleasant. Life is not always good. But be patient. And Naomi took the child and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto him. All things work together. So good. Right. Yeah, you go back and read those verses in chapter 1 and then compare this particular situation. Verse 20 of chapter 1. And she said unto them, call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? And now, she's rejoicing at the birth of this son. Now, You look back at that, those last few verses of chapter 4, though, we see verse 18 going back and talking about that these are the generations of Perez. Who's been talking about? And why would they even go back and talk about somebody like this? But this man, Perez, look back at Genesis chapter 38. Let's find out who this fellow is they're talking about. You remember how Judah had not fulfilled his promise to his daughter-in-law, Tamar, in not giving her the youngest son to raise up heirs to his brother's name. As a result, you remember the story. She posed as a harlot. He went in into her, and as a result of this, verse 28, it came to pass when she prevailed that one put out his hand, the midwife took it and bound his hand a scarlet thread, saying, "This came out first." It came to pass as he drew back his hand that behold, his brother came out, and she said, "How hast thou broken forth? This breach be upon thee." Therefore his name was called Perez. And afterwards came out his brother Zerah. So here is a descendant, Perez, the descendant of Judah. What tribe did Jesus come from? The tribe of Judah. So this is tying back to the fact that this lineage right here, Perez down through Obed, Jesse, David, so forth, will lead us eventually someday to the birth of our Savior, Jesus. So, okay? So that's who he was. All right. Now, we have a few minutes, and again, we've talked a little. I guess that went away. Can you hook me back up and see if there's another chart? Talk a little bit about this custom that we've kind of gone through a little bit. James? Oh, don't talk like that.
Was he in the same position as the closest relative, or was he a single man?
James is asking me a question that the Bible doesn't answer, and I'm sure not going to answer it either. He's saying, "What was Boaz? Did Boaz have a wife prior to this? Did he have children?" So the Bible just doesn't say, but there is an indication that you said that he is an older man because he refers to her as daughter, young maiden, and so forth. So there is quite a difference in age, apparently. But we don't know anything about his family prior to that other than who his father was. Than the descendants of that particular marriage.
I couldn't recall.
No, that's not a bad question. They're not bad questions. Sometimes I give bad answers. No. We just don't know, James, whether or not. But again, back to the situation we've been looking at. It was at least customary, and it was condoned or sanctioned, at least by the law, that a widow, her husband's brother, could in fact take her as a wife and bring up a child that would, the firstborn would actually bear the name of the deceased brother, and that his name would not be wiped out. Look back at Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse, particularly the first verse 5, 6, 7, somewhere along in there. Deuteronomy chapter 25. It says, if brethren dwell together and one of them die and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. So she's got to marry within, you know, basically the tribe at least, and we'll talk a little more about that. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him to wife and perform the duty of an husband's brother unto her. And it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother, which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel, and so forth. That's the main thing we'll take there. But look at Numbers chapter 27. If a man died and he did not have any sons, there was also a situation that arose where this happened. He had six daughters. And they came wanting to know what was going to happen to his inheritance and so forth. And chapter 27, verses 9 through 11, it said, If a man die and have no son, verse 8, then he shall cause his inheritance to pass unto his daughter. And if he have no daughter, then he shall give his inheritance unto his brethren and so forth. But this woman, even though she has her father's inheritance, look at the restrictions that's placed on her as far as marriage. Verse chapter 36 and verse 9. Neither, go back to verse 8, and every daughter that possesseth an inheritance in any tribe of the children of Israel shall be the wife unto one of the family of the tribe of her father, that the children of Israel may enjoy every man the inheritance of his father. Neither shall the inheritance remove from one tribe to another tribe, but every one of the tribes of the children of Israel shall keep himself to his own inheritance. So she's bound. She receives the inheritance of her father, but she's bound to marry within that tribe, so that that inheritance does not go from tribe to tribe. So there are some things, a couple of things that at least customary and bound some of them by law that we find maybe a little bit strange today. All right, questions, comments? I'm sorry. Yes. Yes. That's the reason we went back and hopefully tried to show that connection back to Perez and so forth. Yeah. Yeah, Randall's talking about the fact that there's no question, if you look at all the scriptures beginning back in Genesis, that Christ was a descendant of Abraham. And if you go to Luke's version of the generations, it actually goes all the way back to Abraham. And one of them's in reverse order. I can't remember whether Matthew. Right. Right. Yeah. So. Very important for us to keep in mind that how the Bible started and the promises that were made back in Genesis, those were tracked all the way through, and they all came. Right. And the fact that the point I made, sometimes we don't understand how some things happen, but there's a plan somehow or another. We just have to not let the bumps in the road destroy our faith and so forth in God. He's in control, and we need to remember that. Other comments? All right, now, let me correct what I said last week now that we got here this week. We are going to go back to Judges Wednesday night, so look at your schedule. Grady will have the chapter 17 and 18, I believe, or of Judges. Then next Sunday, we'll finish the book of Judges. Lord willing. And then the next week after that, we'll have a review over the entire contents. Yeah, I kind of spoke out of turn last week. Off the top of my head, I was saying we're going to jump into the book of Ruth and then go back to Judges. And that's what we ended up doing. Maybe not according to the plan, but that's what happened. So I hope you understand. Maybe it hadn't been such an inconvenience. Okay. I think it's about time for the class to be over.